Thank you, Kim, and good morning. I'm pleased to be here today. I'm going to start by talking about human and environmental factors that can affect the geographic distribution and abundance of vectors and vector-borne pathogens, as well as some of the climate and human vector ecological information that's actually needed in order to better inform some of the models that we're developing. And then I'm going to close out by talking about some of the knowledge gaps and where we need to go with future research. So first of all, what are vector-borne diseases? They're diseases that are caused by microorganisms, such as viruses, bacteria, or protozoa, and are transmitted by arthropod vectors, such as fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes. And these diseases cause significant mortality and morbidity globally, but especially in the subtropical and tropical regions. I'm going to specifically focus on dengue fever as a vector-borne disease. Dengue fever and dengue hemorrhagic fever are caused by dengue viruses transmitted by Aedes mosquitoes. And these are mosquitoes that are human commensal mosquitoes, meaning that they preferentially bite humans, that they live close to humans, and that they typically oviposit or lay their eggs in clean water close to human habitation so that they can readily feed upon their preferred meals. Annually, we have more than 100 million people contracting dengue worldwide, and 500,000 of these suffer from the more severe form of dengue fever, dengue hemorrhagic fever. We're seeing an increasing number and severity of cases in the Americas, and Mexico is a prime example of this, where since 2001, we've seen a 600% increase in the number of dengue hemorrhagic cases. We know that there's no vaccine available, so we can only look at prevention. Here's just an illustrative map of the total number of dengue cases reported to the World Health Organization from 1960 to 2005 by country in the Americas. And you can see that as we progress here to 2005, that there's a substantial increase in the number of cases. This map also actually mirrors the range of Aedes aegypti, the primary vector in the Americas for dengue fever. So I'm looking at South Texas for this case study and the total number of confirmed dengue cases from 1980 to 1999. You'll see that there is a huge disparity here. If this is the border, we're looking along this region, you can look at the number of cases in Mexico versus the number of cases in Texas. However, we do have cases here. And if we take a look at where we might find these cases, this is just a map looking at some of the poorest counties in the United States, and you'll notice that the border region is listed here as being among those counties that are the poorest. There's a long history of inequality when it comes to vector-borne diseases and potential risk for vector-borne diseases, too. If you look at this map going back to the 1950s, you can see that this is showing the percentage of premises with Aedes aegypti, the primary vector for dengue, and substandard housing in heavily infested cities in the Americas. So again, we see that low-income houses bear a disproportionate burden on both sides of the border. So in 2005, the CDC conducted a dengue outbreak in Brownsville, Texas, and Matamoros, Mexico, where we were able to document the first case of dengue hemorrhagic fever that was locally acquired in the United States. We conducted a two-stage cluster sampling strategy here of about 280 households on both sides of the border, where we conducted a sero survey as well as an entomological survey and a knowledge, attitudes, and practices survey over a two-week period in December. From this study, we were able to say that 38% of the residents of Brownsville had been exposed to dengue. And of that 38%, 11% had actually never left the United States, had been born in the United States, and so had likely acquired the disease locally. 77% of the residents of Matamoros had been exposed to dengue. And here along the map, you can see that Matamoros and Brownsville are sister cities across the Rio Grande River. If we look at some of the factors that might have been implicated in recent dengue infections in the 2005 outbreak in Matamoros, we can see that with past or recent infections, no air conditioning, no or little repellent use, which is, of course, no surprise. People can't afford repellent. And then tires reportedly not picked up with the trash. So these were factors in Matamoros. In Brownsville, lot sizes that were less than the median, a proxy for poverty, likely would be associated with dengue transmission. So what I'd like to do now is take a look at a map that we have developed, a model that we've developed at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in collaboration with ESRI, that looks at climate projections and risk of dengue fever in North America based on an expanding geographic range of Aedes aegypti, the primary vector for dengue fever. So we're looking at elevations below 1,500 meters, temperatures of 10 degrees Celsius, and population projections. The temperature we derive from our A2 scenario with an extracted January minimum in the United States. Population is the 2050 population projections based on UN and US census forecasts. But they were used to scale up from the current population. And of course, there are always inherent problems in doing this because of human behavior, typically. Migration, fertility, mortality are all issues that we can't very accurately project. And so if we take a look at this map, you can see how the range of Aedes aegypti expands up to the US-Canada border by 2050, putting people at increasing risk for potentially for dengue fever. Oh, let's see if we can go on here. Oh, no. Well, we're going to keep looking at this model, I guess. Let's see. Is it going? Right, I'm just trying to move on to the next slide, and it's not letting me do that. It wants to continue.
It's not being passed in both places?
Neither one is letting me move on. Oh, here we go. Okay. So these were just, I put these in case the model didn't work, but you can see that the ratio of the population at risk by 2050 is over 66%. So I wanted to briefly allude to a new project that recently was funded by the National Science Foundation under the coupled natural and human dynamics. And so we are going into Mexico to look at this, which will look at an altitudinal gradient from a dengue endemic zone in Mexico to an area that is basically today at the margins of transmission. We're very concerned about the potential for Aedes aegypti to expand its range in Mexico up to higher elevations. And so if indeed it does that under a changing climate scenario, it could potentially put Mexico City and approximately 19 million residents who are dengue naive at risk. So we'll be doing four basic parts to this study, looking at how weather and climate factors are coupled with mosquito vector presence and abundance. And particularly, we're interested in areas right at the margins of transmission so we can better understand how the mosquito is thriving or not thriving. From this, we'll develop a spatial predictive model that will look at the potential for future range expansion of Aedes aegypti in this region. And also, we're going to be bringing in human behavior and attributes of man-made environments that are at present and, of course, under forecast scenarios coupled with Aedes aegypti. And finally, we'll be looking at state-of-the-science data assimilation to help us characterize some of the uncertainties in this model. Here is our study area going from Veracruz up to Puebla and looking into San Martin as well. So this is an altitudinal gradient, as I mentioned, that goes from sea level up to about 2,200 meters. So what do we need to help us with our studies? Some of the knowledge gaps that we need to address is we need better surveillance. The bottom line is we have very little surveillance for mosquitoes, particularly along the border areas in the United States. Some of the studies that have been done have been funded studies, but there are no long-term ecological studies that are being conducted where we actually have a sense of what mosquitoes and what potentially what pathogens are entering into the United States along this region, or entering into Mexico from the United States, as is the case with West Nile potentially. The U.S.-Mexico border, as I said, is a prime example of this area at the geographic margins of current dengue transmission. But it's also an area where we have a very underserved population. We need a convergence of scales in order to better understand how to model this. Transmission is local, and it's very sensitive to local variability. Mosquitoes are very sensitive to temperature, relative humidity, types of differences based on rainfall. And we also need to be able to better understand human modification of the landscape, because when we see areas that are known as invasiones, or people where neighborhoods that have just been recently built where there may not be services accessible, we also know that these are areas that may be particularly vulnerable to expanding disease. Human behavior is also a critical component here, where we need to better understand vector-human contact. What are the barriers to vector-human contact, such as screens, such as curtains, or air-conditioned areas? So climate is global, but we have this at a very low spatial resolution, and we need much higher resolution models in order to better understand, particularly with a disease like dengue, where the mosquito vector is a vector that lives in close proximity to its human meals. So with a flight range of between 50 and 100 meters. So we need higher resolution models, and you can see where we're moving here. Trying to get at this with our nested regional climate model to a 4-kilometer resolution. We need longer-term studies. We can't just do snapshots and understand the ecological dimensions of this. So we need to be able to quantify the relationships between meteorological variables and vector or vector-borne pathogen occurrence. We need to be able to examine human behavioral and socioeconomic influences over the longer term. And we need to evaluate the consequences of the shifting distributions of these vectors and the pathogens, particularly the consequences on some of our more vulnerable populations. So, in conclusion, climate change will likely alter the current distribution of vectors and the pathogens, but predicting disease emergence due to climate change is less certain because we're not talking about a linear effect here. There are very complex transmission dynamics that are involved in this, and we need to better understand both the human and the vector ecological components. So I'd like to finish off by acknowledging my collaborators here, from the CDC, from the New Mexico Department of Health, from Colorado State University, and from the National Center for Atmospheric Research. Thank you very much.